Susan's question about choiceless awareness. I think you get to a point where you do, where intention becomes less willful. I think that you, what you find. So in Theravada, it suggests that you do a lot of samatha practice to the point where the mind is so still, even the need for making intention falls away. So then the suggestion is make no effort, which is actually quite difficult. You make no effort, and you start thinking, well, that's still, you're making effort, you're thinking. Yeah. So, and where Zen, I think, has gone right to that. It's just like, so some Zen, Zazen, is it, where they just say, just sitting, right? So they've taken that up right away, just sitting. And that is a very important thing to explore, is the tendency to not use enough effort or will, and then how that becomes less and less necessary. So again, if you feel really sleepy and dull, you put a lot of effort into it, and then your mind has more energy and your effort becomes more subtle. Your language might become more subtle, just like suggestions, little hints, yeah? Like non-resistance. You know, it's just a little hint to the mind. It's not like a huge statement where maybe if I'm really sleepy, come on, wake up, man, get into the game. It's kind of a more powerful statement. So you can, I think we can see a kind of subtlety in our, I'd probably, you know, not just in a whole career of meditation, but day by day, over a retreat, I think we can see that. So there comes a point where it becomes interesting not to do anything, just to be with what is, and like contemplate just the silence of isness. That becomes an interest, yeah, an interest, because you just see there's always this doer. So different teachers and different traditions will approach that in different ways. But so Ajahn Chah has asked, and I've read this often to you, but it's always fun to read, about his meditation. People have asked me, this is Lungpo Cha, people have asked me about my practice. How do I prepare my own mind for meditation? There's nothing special. I just keep it where it always is. They ask, are you then an arhant? Do I know? I am like a tree full of leaves, blossoms, and fruit. Birds come to eat and to nest, yet the tree does not know itself. It follows its nature. It is as it is. So that's when we're looking at choiceless awareness. Rather than trying to explain all that, I'll leave you with the enigma. Then the question, so what happens when you get through the doorway? The main change was in the mind. It became motionless and silent, responding quickly, but not perpetuating the response. Spontaneity became a way of life. The real became natural, and the natural became real. And above all, infinite affection, love, dark and quiet, radiating in all directions, embracing all, making all interesting and beautiful, significant and auspicious. Whoa. And the trouble with that kind of reading is then you try to get it. That's, I think, the genius of the Buddhist teaching is that it doesn't give you any attributes to hang on to, because all attributes are still like acquisitions that you get. And so it's pretty dry stuff, Theravada. It really is like brain surgery without anesthesia. Yeah, it's like the chanting's very it's not like the Hallelujah choir or anything like that, which I would love to sing in, by the way. But its methodology is that like letting go of becoming. So a particular kind of person finds it helpful. And it does, it picks up the theme of suffering to go beyond suffering. But if you don't get readings like that every now and then, you think, oh, this just, you know, I'm just going to watch Marx Brothers or something. I can't take this anymore. So these are, you know, for me, they're significant readings as a possibility. But then, and you kind of see the themes are always, for any mystical tradition, are about silence and stillness and love and open-heartedness, aren't they? They're always, you find that throughout the mystical traditions. But then we try to acquire those, and it goes into the becoming. So when we can touch silence just as the natural, oh yeah, stopping, letting go, when we can touch the openness of the heart, when we see someone suffering, oh yeah, hey, can I help you? You know, we see the naturalness of that mind, which is free from ego striving and ego becoming. And then the question on, I shortchanged you on the question of ignorance. That's a kind of important question, really. If the cause of suffering is attachment to tanha, what's the cause of tanha? What is tanha? Ignorance. And ignorance is ignorance of what? Ignorance of the Four Noble Truths. So it's a kind of closed circle there. And what is the cause of ignorance? Don't know, it's there. And so Buddhism has no Genesis story. You know, in the beginning there was whatever. It just doesn't have that because it's not answering those kinds of questions. So it's not an abstract philosophy which is trying to describe everything. It's not like who was it? The German did all that. It's not like Steiner, you know, which says everything about education and economics and how to grow your carrots in the full moon. It's not that that's wrong. It's not talking about everything. It's not describing everything. It's not like a political philosophy or an economic philosophy, although Buddhists will come up with, like Schumacher's book, Small is Beautiful, and so on. You know, Buddhists will have their own take on things, but its whole point is liberation from suffering. So that's, I think, good to remember, you know, that it has a limited range. So when you get questions of, you know, how did this all begin, and beats me. So the questions, like the question the Buddha asks us to ask, is a skillful question on suffering. Why do I suffer? How do I get out of suffering? That's helpful to remember. So then as practicing Buddhists, sure, we're going to have to answer questions of doctor-assisted suicide and abortion. And, you know, those are serious questions. And if we're in those realms of decision-making, well, all of us have to be involved with those things. But the teaching here is like it's reference morality. Sure, there are references to not killing and not stealing, and references to being responsible in family, and they're very general and they're humanistic. But anyway, so the idea of ignorance is that when we don't understand clearly, we suffer. So it's not like it's not like original sin that we're somehow wrong or bad, but it's just that when we misperceive something or we don't see something clearly, then we're going to get in trouble. So I always like to compare it to the law of gravity. If I don't understand the law of gravity and I get up on that roof and I think, oh, I think I'll just walk out and see what happens, I'm toast, right? And that we just take for granted, because we just have learned that from falling out of trees or whatever kids do. So the Dhamma is the same way. And the Dhamma is that which has a nature to arise is a nature to cease and is not self. And that's the kind of catechism we have that we repeat again and again and again. But the more deeply that's imbued, the less tendency there is to grasp that which is suffering, to grasp the changing conditions, and yet be with them in a decent and peaceful and happy way. So ignorance is the prime cause, not understanding the Four Noble Truths. And that's not like, it's not a question of, intelligence, like Western ideas of intelligence, because people can be very, very, like, you know, they can get Nobel Peace, they can get Nobel Prizes for physics and still be maybe very cutthroat and competitive, right? That's quite possible. So you can be very bright that way. And yet someone who's really streetwise can actually be more peaceful. I had this fabulous experience in India. I sometimes talk about where I was. I had long, you know, long hair. I was an Afghan then, traveling around India and bemoaning my fate and into existential despair and all these things that one did before one got to the Dhamma, and reading Metamorphosis, getting more depressed, and reading Camus and getting more depressed. So I was down to my last $50 in India, and it's not a very secure feeling. And I had a little bit of cash in a bank account, so I wrote to my brother and I asked him to send it to Bombay. And so I was hanging around the Bombay American Express office. This would have been 1971 or 72. And kind of anxious to get the banknote from American Express, and didn't come. So then I'm moping around, and I kind of went off the main area to a more poor area, and there was a guy sitting under a table, which happens in India, doesn't it? And he kind of calls me over. I go over and I sit down with him under the table. Must have been a tall table, I don't know. Something like that. That was the shade. And he offers me a bidi. You know, those little Indian cigarettes? Yeah. Or smoked cigarettes. He was the most compassionate person I had seen. His eyes were just so radiant in compassion and so full of beauty. So we somehow communicated. I forget how it worked, but he was a street sweeper. And he had about 100 meters of street that he had to sweep. And if he swept it, he got his 5 rupees. And if he didn't, that was it. That was his security. So here am I, kind of Western, who's got all the possibilities, and I'm feeling really, oh, poor me, I've only got $50. This guy had never seen $50 in his life. And he was just so, so compassionate, so radiant. It was such a powerful lesson, you imagine, right? I still remain depressed for some time, but at least it showed me that, yeah, that like compassion and those things are there's wisdom in things which are not just being clever and being successful on a kind of worldly level. So ignorance in Buddhism then is like really not understanding the nature of things. And so the clue is that when we do suffer, there's something we haven't understood. Not physical suffering, or, you know, just the kind of shock we get if someone dies. Those are natural kinds, but just that grinding worry that we have in our minds, or that grinding complaining, or that kind of stuff that we just fall into misunderstandings about life. And then we're always asked, well, awaken to that. Begin with that, rather than judge yourself as being wrong. Begin with the friction, begin with the conflict, and see if you can use this teaching to go beyond the conflict. In the chanting that Mr. Goenka would do on those Goenka retreats, for those of you who have done those retreats, Avijja Pachaya Sankara, and here's that deep voice, Avijja Pachaya Sankara, Sankara Pachaya Vijnana, Vijnana Pachaya. That's the dependent origination. It always begins with ignorance. Avijja Pachaya. Avijja is ignorance, and Vijja is knowledge. And that knowledge is not information, it's insight.